Veritas Academy was chosen by Niche as the number one Christian and private school in Northern Virginia and third in the state of Virginia. Have coffee with the headmaster every Tuesday morning. Schedule your visit now. VeritasAcademyDC.com. VeritasAcademyDC.com.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
It is 5:07 here on a Wednesday morning in the nation's capital. Thanks for tuning in to O'Connor and Company. Wait till you hear who's going to be joining us this morning. 6:05, James Rosen, White House correspondent for Newsmax. 6:35, Cal Thomas. 7:05, Governor Scott Walker, now with Young America's Foundation. 8:05, Josh Kroshar over at National Journal. And then at 8:35, Karen Durham Aguilera. She's from Arlington National Cemetery as we continue to talk about this coming Memorial Day. If that weren't enough, sitting in all morning long is our good, I was going to say old friend, but you're still younger
it's
than everyone.
Fine.
Mary Catherine Hamm, a voice on this very station on mornings over 10 years ago.
Yes, we don't need to put a number on it.
You were right out of the womb back then.
I was just a babe, and here I am, an old lady.
Mary Catherine, it's great to see you as always. We've maintained a very good relationship. When
yes.
I say we, the royal we here at WMAL, and you've been a frequent guest here
Definitely.
Over the years. And of course, we've seen you. Rise in visibility. And
glad to be back. There's a lot of life that's happened in those 10 years.
Yes.
It's nice to,
including
nice to visit again.
Three wonderful children, and congratulations on your third, a year old almost?
7 months.
All right, well, almost.
We're still in the thick of it.
Oh, boy, you sure are. So in other words, you're welcome. You got a morning off.
Thank you.
Normally, we would, introduce you and bring you in and have a nice, casual conversation about what's going on and what's happening in your career. But we do have a pretty major story.
Yes.
Out of Texas that we should address and discuss and give you all the latest on what's happening here. As of now, this is the tragic school shooting, of course, in Uvalde, Texas. 19 children and two adults were killed in this shooting. It's horrific. Obviously, it's despicable. It's disgusting. It's evil. And sadly, Mary Catherine, we saw this pattern that we've seen all too often at moments like this. It seemed like instead of lamenting and mourning and waiting and grieving and certainly giving respect to those parents and loved ones who were waiting to hear the tragic news of their little child, instead, way too many people in the media and in politics had to immediately use this as some kind of weapon to beat their opponents over the head. And I don't want to fall into that trap, but it's part of the story, sadly.
Well, there's the story, and then there's the conversation about the story, which inevitably moves at the speed of Twitter,
yes.
Regardless of what the nature of the story is, even when it would. And this is a time when I try to stay off of Twitter for several hours after an event like this, because
very healthy
there's
decision.
A lot of bad information and there's a lot of bad behavior.
Yeah.
And this is a time for coping with the idea that there's real evil in the world and there's incredible sadness that people are wrestling with right now and getting these calls, and it is just devastating.
My friend Jesse Kelly, who, by the way, has a pretty, in-your-face presence on social media. He's a radio show host out of Houston, the Houston area, which is certainly close to this tragic situation. He actually posted three very helpful social media rules in the wake of a mass shooting. Number one, pray. As we speak, families are getting the phone call every parent has nightmares about. Number two, do not say his name or read his manifesto. That should be national policy, and I completely agree with that one. And then number three, don't politic. At the very least, that should be the 24-hour rule. And we saw all of it violated.
Yes, very quickly.
Yeah.
And there's also evidence, pretty compelling evidence, that the way we talk about these things can affect whether there are copycats. And that's
right.
Always something that I keep front of mind, that giving these guys too much fame and too much focus and talking too much about their tactics can actually create even more of this problem, which is the last thing that I want to be part of.
There's way too much evidence to support exactly that. And by the way, we just had a tragic shooting in Buffalo, of course, a mass shooting that wasn't at a school, but it was another soft target, a grocery
right.
store. And I think that there's way too much evidence that supports the idea that there are copycats involved here. Even if you go back to Columbine back in the 90s, there have been many school shootings where we learn the murderer in those cases actually literally studied and they were obsessed with those two individuals. So why do we keep falling into this pattern? Why does the media do what they do, and why do politicians continue to do what they do?
Well, if I am to give my fellow citizens the benefit of the doubt, which they do not extend to me, yeah. I would say it's because people are desperate to fix this problem. And I would say, yes, same, right? We do not come to the same conclusions about how that is possible. But I do think this is a sort of a barbaric yawp to say, oh my gosh, this problem is so heartbreaking. Surely we must act. And the problem is, when it comes to the acting, you must deal with the Constitution, you must deal with the culture of our country, and there's certain roadblocks here that do not allow for solving the problem with a simple, they think there's a simple federal solution. I do not agree with that premise.
Right. No, I completely agree. I think you're giving them more benefit than they deserve, frankly, because I just asked, and it was sort of a trick question. Why do politicians do what they do, and why does the media do what they do or does what they does? I always have issues with pluralizing the media. Is it a singular or a plural? The point is,
either way,
why does the media do what they do? Always it's for the same reason. It's for ratings. It's for clicks. It's for attention. I mean, there is ratings in doing 24/7 nonstop coverage of a shooting. Sadly, it's the equivalent of rubbernecking on the expressway when there's an accident. Everybody slows down to see it, even though there's no real reason to slow down and see it other than you want to see it.
Right.
And why do politicians do what they do? Well, always for the same reasons, for money, for power, and for votes. And sadly, we saw that with the president of the United States. I mean, how many crises has this guy overseen, many of his own making and his administration's policies making, over the last 15 months, and he's taken forever to address them? He's taken forever to... How long did it take him to say anything about the fact that mothers couldn't feed their babies because of the shortage of formula on the shelves? He wouldn't say anything about it for months.
It was a long time. There's also... the one that sticks with me is the lack of mention of 13 fallen Marines at the State of the Union. Which could have easily been put into the speech in a way that was, I know that it happened on his watch and he feels like it's a political hit to him. Perfectly good way to put that into a speech and honor them without having it fall back on you politically.
Perfect example. And yet he didn't, and he would not mention it. But this event occurred while he was still flying on Air Force One from Asia. When he learned about it, he gets on the ground and he can't stop himself to address America from the White House. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
As a nation, we have to ask, when in God's name are we going to stand up to the gun lobby? When in God's name we do what we all know in our gut needs to be done?
Mary Catherine, both of us are pretty public and on the record with our criticisms of Joe Biden's predecessor, Barack Obama. But Barack Obama at least could take a moment like this and put on the sometimes even Reagan-esque mantle of mourner in chief and show some empathy and some sympathy for what we're going through. And yet at the still time, subtly, sometimes less subtly so, make a political thing about it. This was just purely full on politics, what we saw.
Yeah, I think the president at this point is not capable of giving that if he was ever capable of giving that type of speech, I don't think he is now. And you know, there's real anger and there's real sadness there, but the pivot is so very quick. And I should also, the gun lobby, if you want to, let's talk about, like, the NRA is a shadow of its former
self. Yeah, the NRA is really pretty toothless these days.
Right, there's sort of this idea that it's this looming specter that controls everything, and it really, at this point, very obviously does not. And this is what I'm saying about there being a simple federal solution. The issue that many on the left have that they, you know, let's ban the guns and then we'll take the guns away. Whatever the thing is that they're planning, you have to deal with the Constitution and you have to deal with American voters, because it's not the gun lobby.
It's the voters.
People.
It's those pesky Americans with their really annoying freedoms. All right. A little bit more to say about this. And again, not to politic on this, but what we have heard and what's been said needs to be at least put into context and responded to. Mary Catherine and I will continue to do that, because we do have one common goal here. We want to protect our children. We do. So can we? How can we? We'll get into that in a moment.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
Yesterday was a big day in politics, by the way, Mary Catherine, and we had some huge high-profile primaries all across the country, including your home state of Georgia.
Yes.
Is that your home state or where you went to college?
North Carolina is my home state. It's my adopted state.
Right. Because you always confuse me when you're rooting for teams because it's either Georgia or Duke.
Well, see. Okay, let me tell you. Here's the deal.
All right.
I grew up on Tobacco Road. I got the best of ACC basketball.
Okay.
And then I went to college at Georgia and got the best of the SEC.
So I think that there's a lot of Maryland fans here who might disagree with the best of ACC basketball. And as a Michigan fan, I really don't want to talk about football with Georgia right now.
Understood.
So let's just set that aside. So we will give you details on yesterday's primaries a little later in the morning and give you some analysis on that. But, you know, I want to do what you did, which is to give the greatest benefit of the doubt to our colleagues, even those across the political aisle and political spectrum, on their reaction to these shootings. And they claim they want to protect our children.
Right.
But, of course, the first thing they do is pretty much this: try to propose the same laws that have been opposed by, yes, we the people, through our representatives for years now. And they just won't work. I mean, how many times do we have to say it? It's such a cliche. But if you're willing to break the longstanding law against killing an innocent person, you're probably going to be willing to break the law about, well, for instance, bringing a gun to a school. You know, it's against the law in Texas to bring a gun within 1,000 feet of the school. Clearly, this guy was okay breaking that kind of law. So that's not going to do it. Honestly, I would have more respect for them if they stood up and said, it's time to repeal the Second Amendment.
Well,
I mean, it wouldn't work.
Well, I think it would be the necessary first step to do what they think would work.
Right. First, you repeal the Second Amendment, then you have to confiscate guns.
Yes. So you have to lower the number of guns is sort of the vague idea for how this would work. And again, I will concede I am in agreement with my friends on the left that we have a unique problem in this country.
Yes.
Right. And that is partly because we have a unique constitution that imbues every citizen with the right to be armed, right? So we do have more guns. So then you add a mental health problem from 2 years of, well, we had a mental health problem to start with.
It's way more acute now.
And then that gets you into some really dangerous situations. And that's where we are now. But I think you're right that the repealing the Second Amendment would be the necessary first step to do what they think would work. Now, I am highly skeptical that it would work. And also, you'll never win an election again if you try to repeal the law.
And they know that, and that's why they won't say it. But I would still have respect for them. I mean, they would never win another election, but I would at least respect the argument a little bit more. But, you know, it is we as conservatives, we do need to confront the idea that, yes, this is unique to this country, these kind of mass shootings. I don't think that all roads lead to the Second Amendment. I think that writ large, it's about more freedom and liberties that go well beyond just the Second Amendment. But also to my friends on the left who say, well, these things don't happen in France. Well, you know what? In France, you can't get an abortion past the age of or after 13 weeks. You have to have an ultrasound first with 24 hours waiting period. There is more respect for children and life in that country writ large, ingrained into the society, even in France. They have more respect for the unborn. I think you can't discount the idea that children being raised in this culture, in this country, are told from an early age that children and life is not valued. And I think that's part of the conversation, too, or at least should be.
Well, and when you talk about legislative remedies, one of the things that I always want the federal government to do is to do the things it has already done. Right.
Yeah.
So you have some tools. After the Virginia Tech shooting many years ago, they sort of federalized and tried to smooth the paths for reporting mental health issues and these sort of things to the federal check system.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be surprised to know that that was not a thorough process and has not actually come together smoothly.
Mm-hmm.
If we could work on that as a step, that would be great because that's a thing that we did, but see, what we do is we pass the legislation and then we're like, we did a thing.
There you go.
But that actually doesn't do the thing.
You're not actually enforcing that legislation that you just passed. By the way, what branch of government's responsible for enforcing existing laws? Oh, that would be the executive branch. Yeah. Well, Mary Catherine, and we will surely have a conversation over the course of the next several days, as well we should, about protecting our children and about keeping this sort of thing from happening within the confines of the freedoms enshrined in the Constitution. Let's pause for a moment and reflect on what did, in fact, stop this from happening. It was law enforcement. It was a Border Patrol agent who happened to be nearby. I think you had mentioned he's part of a tactical team.
Border tactical team. So,
which is basically the equivalent of SWAT.
Right. They're specially trained for that kind of, you know, entering a hot situation.
I've heard two reports. I believe Daily Mail or somebody is reporting that the agent happened to be nearby and rushed into the school on his own.
And was also injured. So
not with his
hope
team.
For the best for him.
Yes. Certainly he's in our prayers. But he came in while police were engaging and trying to, you know, hold off the shooter on one end of the school. This guy came in and took him out. And that's a big part of the story that needs to be focused on because, again, there's been incredible lack of support for law enforcement, certainly the Border Patrol.
Right.
By this very president who's, you know, yelling at us from the White House about doing something. And he's been undermining the actual heroes in this story.
And in this area, we've seen several districts decide that they didn't want resource officers at the school and then very quickly change their minds when the school year started and you've got mental health issues and you've got a bunch of kids who are back in schools for the first time and having some real problems and real violent problems in some cases. It turned out that was not a great idea. I also want to say that in the wake of these things, I try to concentrate on the victims themselves and learn a little about them. And even though it's so heart-wrenching. We don't have those names yet because this is such a tragic event and all these parents need to be notified. But that's something I like to focus on. And I think about, you know, I think about my kids and I get them ready every morning and I do their hair and I send them off into the world. And this is every parent's worst nightmare. And so my heart is with those people. Yeah. And I hate the idea that somehow prayers are icky now.
Yeah, we've been shamed out of praying for people.
But
that's not enough.
It may not.
You know what?
Conceded that we want other solutions, but praying is good.
At this moment, those parents and certainly those children and their souls, they absolutely deserve our prayers, and we won't be shamed out of that. All right, listen, we will talk at 7:05 to Governor Scott Walker. He was a governor of a state during tragic events like this. He's now in charge of Young America's Foundation, focuses on our young people, and he has a pretty good insight into all of those things. That's coming up in a moment. Unbelievable story about an ISIS-affiliated suspect now who tried to put together a plot to kill former President George W. Bush. We'll give you the details next.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL. News now. Now.
On News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
O'Connor and Company.
5:37 here, O'Connor and Company. Thanks for tuning in. And as this story develops and we learn more coming out of Uvalde, Texas, I'm always going to say, I know that's some people are pronouncing it another way, like Uvalde.
Sure.
Uvalde, I
Uvalde.
Heard. Uvalde. But it's Spanish. It's Uvalde, right?
That one would think, but
as
it's America. We like to change these things up.
As we hear more, we will obviously download it all to you as soon as we get it and can verify it, but we're not going to go off in tangents either. Coming up later this morning, 6:05, James Rosen, White House correspondent for Newsmax, 6:35, Cal Thomas, 7:05, Governor Scott Walker, 8:05, Josh Kroshauer, National Journal, get some details on yesterday's primaries, and then at 8:35, Karen Durham Aguilera, Executive Director of Arlington National Cemetery, getting ready for this weekend's Memorial Day event. Mary Catherine Hamm is with us all morning long. MK, can we go with the MK route?
Always MK, or Ham is fine
thing.
Too.
How about the hammer?
I always
How
go
about
with,
ha- right,
I'm happy
stop.
To answer to that.
This story is crazy town. Fox News is reporting on an arrest made, and Forbes actually, I believe, had the exclusive reporting on this. You don't see Forbes coming out with exclusive reporting that often, but they've got this one. An ISIS-affiliated suspect arrested for an alleged plot to kill President Bush. Quoting from the Forbes article, an Iraqi citizen living in Columbus, Ohio, has been charged federally with an immigration crime and with aiding and abetting a plot to murder former United States President George W. Bush. This according to a press release by the Justice Department. 52-year-old Shihab Ahmed Shihab. That would be three Shihabs in one name, which is, I believe, a new record. Originally came to the United States in September of 2020 on a visitor visa, filed for asylum March of 21, and that asylum filing is pending review. All right, so let's set that aside for a moment because I think that's worth exploring as well. But the fact that George W. Bush is still in the crosshairs for, you know, there's a jihad there. You know, it's hard to erase a jihad.
Well, and this guy, it seems, was dumb enough to case his Secret Service staffed home. So we're glad that he was not a more savvy criminal.
Yeah, if you start, you know, driving back and forth real slow and taking pictures of a former president's home, you're going to be on someone's radar.
There's a lot of guys there who are trained to keep an eye out for that.
And one must assume that President George W. Bush, I don't know this, but I got to think that he's got maybe even some amped up Secret Service protection, given the fact that he was a wartime president and that war that he waged was against, you know, terrorists.
Yeah, and I'm not sure what the rules are, and that I believe the presidents themselves can decide levels of protection in some cases years after they're out, but yes, one would hope he is well covered.
We don't have a lot of details about this because the Secret Service, unlike other law enforcement agencies, sadly, they protect all of these because it protects their operations and it protects their methods. So we don't have a whole lot of details other than that the arrest was made. And it is interesting that the arrest also includes a immigration offense. And let me go back again to read the nature in which Shihab Ahmed Shihab Shihab came into this country September of 2020 on a visitor visa. So that just means he came in from Iraq. He's an Iraqi citizen. So he got a flight from Iraq and came to America. In most countries, we go ahead and grant, okay, you want to come and visit. You sort of automatically get a visa to be a tourist. You know, you're going to come to Disney World or what have you. Or Columbus, Ohio, which is, you know, usually right up there with Disney World.
Number one on the list.
And it's usually like 30 or 60 days, I think. And, you know, I know we talk about the border a lot, but overstaying a visitor visa or a tourist visa is...
It's a huge part of it, yeah.
Huge part of it. Then, in March of 21, for one reason or another, he had issue. He filed for asylum. I'm only guessing, you know, from September to March, what is that, 6 months? Maybe that was the extent of his visa, right. And he wanted to stay. He filed for asylum from Iraq, March of 21, and it's still pending review. That's 14 months ago. How many other Shihabs are in this country?
Well, and it speaks to the gaslighting on the idea that any suggestion that anyone might be dangerous and that we should be involved in some pretty serious vetting is somehow offensive. It's not offensive. Right. These are the facts of life.
No, if they apply for asylum, it's because they're desperate and they're needy and they're oppressed and they you're not supposed to ask those questions. In fact, they should just get automatically granted asylum. That's what we'll hear.
There's due diligence to be done. And if you don't catch these things, again, this is like so many issues. You know, once you're up to like three offenses, something tragic happens and it's like, well, I wish we'd caught that before. Well, this is how you catch it before.
Exactly. Right? How many times have we said, oh, how did this one slip through the cracks? How did this? So, I mean, the asylum policies that President Trump instilled and at least tried to push through with regard to extreme vetting and a certain level of skepticism when people, especially when people come from a country. I know that there's problems in Iraq, but are they really a country that right now qualifies for automatic asylum this many years after the war in that country?
Well, and again, asking the federal government to do the thing that it's supposed to do first, which is, like, for instance, Afghanistan refugees, of which I would like to welcome so many.
Mm.
We had a list ready of the ones who were vetted, but we bungled that so badly that we could not get those great allies to our country out first and foremost. So many of them are languishing.
They're still there, or they've been killed by the Taliban. But instead, when under fire, what did the administration do? We'll just fly as many people over here as possible. And now we're vetting them here, if we're vetting them at all. And that's another part of our federal government that's very, very much broken. It's 5:43. By the way, Mary Catherine, one other aspect of this foiled assassination plot of former President Bush that should be brought up. I mentioned Forbes had the exclusive story, right? So here's Forbes' headline: ISIS plotting to assassinate George W. Bush in Dallas. That's a very clear, you know, because this guy is connected to ISIS.
Right.
Here are all the other headlines on this story reporting on it. Here is CNN. Iraqi citizen living in Ohio arrested after allegedly plotting to assassinate. The local ABC affiliate. Columbus man charged with aiding plot to assassinate. Ohio. This is from the Justice Department, actually, their press release. Ohio man charged with aiding and abetting plot to murder. Ohio man? Ohio man?
It's like someone I saw the other day called Stacey Abrams' comment about her state being the worst place to live in mm-hmm. America, an eyebrow-raising comment. And I was like, well, that's generous.
That's one way to put it. So Ohio man, again, just so you're clear, if you happen to see that headline, it's like, why is this Cleveland fan trying to kill Bush? No, he is an Iraqi national. He's been in the country 14 months, and he is affiliated with ISIS. That's hard to put that in a headline. Ohio man just says it all.
It does. It really encompasses it.
All right. So yesterday was a big day in primaries, in many high-profile races. Georgia, I think, probably had the biggest headlines. Herschel Walker, to no one's surprise, just ran away with it. We're used to seeing Herschel Walker running without much impediment to the end zone, and he will be the Republican nominee for Senate to square up against.
As expected.
Senator Warnock, how do you evaluate? Right now the polls show it deadlocked.
So I think some in the political press sort of miss how legendary and beloved Herschel Walker is.
Yeah.
Like, you start a race with 98.5% name recognition in the state of Georgia. I mean, it's ludicrous.
Yeah.
Look, I think it's a good year for Republicans. I think he will have some challenges in the general election because he is not a policy wonk.
Mm-hmm.
He's not somebody who's super studied on these things, although he's, as we know from his football career, a hard worker, somebody willing to put in time.
Yeah. Actually, I know that from Celebrity Apprentice.
I thought he
did a fine job stepping up there.
No, he will. I think he'll have some challenges, but it is a very good year, and he is Herschel Walker in the state of Georgia.
And he's running against a senator, although he is an incumbent, only a 2-year senator who also is not really a policy wonk, right?
He's
a former reverend.
Well, he's a Democrat, so it doesn't count. They can do whatever they want.
That's true.
But can I say very quickly about Herschel Walker? I got a chance to meet him for the first time. In the last 6 months or so, he was up here doing something, and someone said, I know you're a Dogs fan. Do you want to come and meet Herschel? I was like, say no more. I will be there.
Do you want to meet Herschel? Yes.
So just so my cards are on the table, I'm a total Herschel, you know, sycophant when it comes to football. I can
you're
separate those two a little bit and you know, evaluate the race. But I went and I was like, I'm going to play it super cool, guys.
Yeah.
Did she play it super cool? She did not. She took her 4-month-old baby dressed in every single Bulldog piece of clothing I could possibly find to meet Herschel, took a bunch of pictures of her with him. And then not only that, I took a 1980 Coke bottle commemorative out of my purse and was like, I just happened to have this with me, Mr. Walker. Would you cite it for me?
That's great.
A present for my husband, by the way.
I thought it was going to be an article of clothing that you whipped out the Sharpie for, or maybe even a body part.
A 42-year-old Coke bottle.
I love that, that you've been hanging on to. That's impressive. So that'll be an interesting race to watch. And by the way, you said it's a good year for Republicans. It's kind of an anomaly these days for both senators from Georgia to be Democrats.
Oh, yes.
And if you do get a Democrat senator from Georgia, it's a Sam Nunn kind of Democrat, not necessarily a Warnock kind of.
John Ossoff.
Yeah.
Is a senator from Georgia.
Yeah. There
Two
you go.
Blue senators. What did we do?
We'll see what happens there. Also in Georgia, by the way, a lot of people were looking at the governor's race. Kemp, who was backed by Vice President Pence and opposed by, in fact, at one point, Donald Trump, I think, said Stacey Abrams might be better than Kemp as the governor. He was backing former Senator Perdue, and Kemp did end up winning that primary. A lot of people
wiped
were watching
the floor
that.
With
yeah.
Perdue.
Yeah, it wasn't close. Also, Secretary of State race was closely watched. The incumbent Secretary of State, who was under fire for his actions in the intervening weeks after Election Day in 2020, to say the least, he faced a primary challenge from Representative Jody Heiss, who was also backed by Trump, and Heiss did not prevail, so the incumbent Secretary of State in Georgia. So all in all, other than Herschel Walker, I know everyone wants to say, well, how did Trump do on the primaries?
Right.
In Georgia, not so good.
Well, yeah, it looks like outside of Herschel Walker, all of his backed candidates either are going to a runoff or lost outright. And I do not think, and I'm willing to listen to an argument on this, but I don't think you can give him credit for Herschel Walker winning in the state of Georgia. Like those two fortunes aligned, but he was not.
I'll say, you know what? Let me give some credit to her. I think that he was incredibly instrumental in encouraging Herschel Walker to run. And Herschel Walker is friends with Trump back from the aforementioned Celebrity Apprentice days. And the USFL days, in fact. And I think that being around Trump during his presidency as much as he was may have been an inspiration for him to run. So let's maybe we can give him that.
I will concede that part of the argument.
The other big story out of the Texas primaries is that Attorney General Ken Paxton faced a challenge by a very high-profile name. That would be a Bush. That would be the son of Jeb Bush, George P. Bush, who had been, I believe, the Ag Secretary, which is a big job in Texas. And Ken Paxton won handily as well, thus temporarily, at least for now, ending that Bush's political prospects. It's 5:50. Oh, we'll have more on this with Josh Kroshauer later in the program and at 6:35 in just about a half an hour with the one and only Cal Thomas right now.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.